Coach Drew and Baylor complete college basketball's greatest rebound and rebuild with a championship.
This is High Motor by BetMGM. Andrew Doughty and Chase A. Kitty. Tuesday morning after the national championship, we will get back to our normal, was it Monday, Thursday? I can't even remember. It's been a few weeks. It was a Monday, Thursday schedule, I believe. Presumably next week we'll get back to that. After adjusting to the new tourney schedule, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks we had a different schedule. But we'll get back to Monday, Thursday starting next week before the draft. A lot of draft talk coming up. But it is Tuesday morning after Baylor's ass-kicking of Gonzaga. And here's what we're going to do today on High Motor by BetMGM. We have some reactions to that bloodbath on Monday night. We're going to have a disappointment conversation tourney-wide, not just relating to Monday night. Chase has a pick for everybody that will probably hit because everything is hitting right now.
Mm.
And then we're going to wrap the show with a brief conversation on where do we go from here with betting. What is next for you to bet on? Football is obviously done. We have the draft coming up, but that's a big one. Basketball now done. So what is next for us over the next few weeks, over the next few months for you to bet on? Hopefully you've been listening throughout the tournament and did well. If you weren't, that's your own fault, and have some balance in that BetMGM account to build moving forward. Some of that balance coming from the first half overs the last two games. You didn't take the over like everybody did. As of Monday morning on BetMGM.com, 84% of the over-under handle was on the over. I'm sure that came down. I think the last numbers I had were as of like 9 or 10 Eastern on Monday morning. So I'm sure in the 12 hours after that was released, that came down a little bit. I think it was 60% of the tickets were on the over, but a staggering 84% of the handle was on the over. I don't know where that settled given how late it was. I cannot imagine it dropped below 80. If it did, it was still probably in the high 70s. You didn't take that. You were all over that first half total. Like, what was that, 76? I think it was
76.
And we had 80, it was 47. You didn't take the second half number, though, did you?
I did not. I was happy to sit on the one that I hit and just call it quits there, walk out of the season with some money.
Very general question for you after Monday night. What's your biggest takeaway from that? We talk about all the time on the show how we don't want to take a game and make it more than it was, and that was just a game that was just happened on whatever night it was, whatever the stakes were. That game was played on the field, on the court. There doesn't necessarily have to be big picture takeaways. Now we're, 7, 8 hours removed from this game. Any big picture takeaways there, or are you still firmly entrenched in that was just one game?
Yeah, I mean, I feel a little bit bad for Gonzaga. I personally have been in the past, a mild critic of the don't overhype Gonzaga thing. I get that they're good. They're probably a deserving, top 10 team, but they still play in the West Coast Conference. Like, let's just have some perspective. I've certainly said that in the past. These last couple years, it has become pretty clear, like, hey, they really are like a top five kind of team. You know, that team that played North Carolina in the championship, this team that was undefeated going into the title game, they're legit. And if you're on social media, regardless of who you are, whether you've got 3 followers or 30,000 followers, if your take is, well, they played in the Big Ten, they wouldn't be undefeated. Okay, that's probably true, but they're still a deserving one seed. They'd still be a Michigan-type team, an Illinois-type team. They're still deserving. Look at the teams they beat this year. It's not just like they went and beat Portland twice and, the University of San Francisco twice and, coasted to an undefeated record. I think my takeaway is that in this game with this matchup, Baylor was better. And maybe that's why the point spread was so short at 4.5. That's something I think we talked about before this title game matchup was set, that we thought the point spread would be around there. But I don't necessarily know that I connected it to how tough of a matchup Baylor was for Gonzaga, not just because of their length and because of their defense, because they too have future pro guards, the way they could attack those ball screens, the way they could challenge Gonzaga's defense, which hasn't really been good all year, but hasn't necessarily hurt them because they're so gifted offensively. It was just a really tough matchup for Gonzaga to draw this particular team the way it's composed in the finals. I don't look at Gonzaga as though they're some fraudulent team. They were really, really good. We don't always have great teams in college basketball. Doesn't mean basketball isn't like immensely enjoyable, but this was a season where I thought we had two really, really great teams at the top, and we got to watch them duke it out for the championship, and I'm not necessarily sold that the better team won. I thought Baylor was certainly the better team that night, and they were certainly the right matchup to beat Gonzaga. So those were sort of my takeaways.
Gonzaga didn't look good. I'm generally on the same page with here, and I have a potentially controversial take coming after this. Gonzaga didn't look good, but last night was so much more. I know that not necessarily you and I specifically, but the question is always asked, who really won that game or who actually lost that game? And Baylor won that game. Like, Gonzaga didn't play well. We get it. Like, Corey Kispert didn't play well. Drew Timmy played horrific defense. He just looked completely lost for, like, the first 15 minutes of that game. They weren't matching up well down low. Baylor's not even that long, but they're just super athletic. And like you said, the matchup just wasn't there for them. The takeaway for me is more, like, I don't even think that much lower of Gonzaga today than I did yesterday. Going into yesterday, were you part of this group? I was fully aboard the, this might be one of the best teams in college basketball history train. Like, I don't know if they were up there with, you know, the Villanova team that we saw or some of those North Carolina teams like 09 or going back to the one that beat Gonzaga. I mean, there are, that's a really hard conversation to have. It's kind of like having the conversation after the UCLA Gonzaga game. My initial thoughts are, and I still believe this, that was one of the best games I've ever seen in my entire life of any sport. It's also hard to remember where we were in thinking of these other games. But anyways, I was aboard that train thinking that this might be one of the best teams in college basketball history. Were you aboard that train too?
You know, I never thought of it in that lens. I think off the cuff, I would say I think they're one of the best offensive teams. I'm not sure I want to put them in the all-time great, all-time complete category holistically, but I will meet you halfway in terms of their offense. I think all-time offensive great team.
They beat KU this year. They beat West Virginia this year in a game that Suggs was... Wasn't Suggs out for almost that entire game? You'd remember that better than I would.
He missed a pretty heavy time. That was a weird game, not just because Suggs missed probably three quarters of that game, maybe, but also because Tshiebwe was still with West Virginia at that point. And so that it just looked like a very different game than, say, if they would have met in the NCAA tournament. And it would have been run up and down the court all game, all 40 minutes, lots of offense. It was just very different in how West Virginia attacked them.
Suggs actually played 26 minutes in that game. I thought he went out in the first half, 26 minutes for that game. So they beat KU, they beat West Virginia, they beat Iowa, they beat the shit out of Virginia. BYU ended up being a pretty darn good team. My controversial take here is that do not confuse this at all. I am not the, if they had played in the Big Ten, they wouldn't have gone undefeated. They wouldn't have been a one seed. I can't help but wonder if playing... So the Virginia game was on December 26th. They played BYU on January 7th. They played BYU again on February 8th. And they played BYU again on March 9th. Like, that is it. There were some teams that didn't completely suck in there. Like, Loyola Marymount wasn't that bad. St. Mary's was fine this year. But generally, from December 26th up until the tournament kicked off, I mean, even Norfolk State and then Oklahoma, almost three entire months of playing a six seed three times, and that is it. Every other team wasn't even close to the tournament. Most of those teams weren't even NIT teams. I can't help but wonder what that does to a team when... Yeah, we can all be impressed by what they're doing, I've always just wanted to see Gonzaga in the Pac-12 just purely out of curiosity, because I don't, like, I never stay up for Gonzaga games anymore. If they're playing like a BYU or if St. Mary's is good, that's fine. But when Gonzaga is playing Pacific or San Diego, you might stay up for that, but I don't anymore. Like, I just, I don't care. Unless you have money on that, I just don't care. And I can't help but wonder if 3 months worth of games in which you're playing almost nobody, how does that affect a team? What they did against those teams was remarkably impressive, blowing out these teams night after night after night. I get they suck, but still, what they have done, whatever they had, 20-something consecutive wins of 10 or more points, that's impressive. But playing all these bad teams over and over and over again, what does that do to your mindset? Like, I'm trying really hard to straddle the line of being reasonable here and not being a hot take, because I really don't believe that this schedule led to what happened last night. There were other things at play here, 99% of which is just Baylor played an unbelievable game, one of the best championship performances we've ever seen in the sport. But are you at least with me where you can't help but wonder how this schedule affects your mindset? And I don't know, like, if what they did in the tournament up to this point was enough to kind of get over that, because like, they didn't play an elite team. UCLA was playing extremely well, but I think we can't just, like, totally discount what UCLA was before this, and I'm still not totally sure what kind of team UCLA actually is. But, like, Oklahoma, Creighton, USC, UCLA, and I don't want to go back and relitigate any of those wins because, again, I don't think that highly of those teams, but they still beat the shit out of all those teams. I don't want to go back and relitigate that, but like, they hadn't played a really, really good team in a long, long time. I can't help but wonder if that affects a team in a game like this. Is that at least a fair take for me, I guess?
Yeah, I don't think you're being unfair. And I think that's a little bit of what I was referencing earlier when I said, you know, historically, I've been a guy who has been critical of Gonzaga. Like, that, I'm just not sure how much West Coast Conference basketball prepares you to be, like, the hunted at the top of the bracket. I don't think I feel that way about this year's team specifically. And it would be one thing. I mean, when you look at the games they played in this tournament, like, throw Norfolk State out. Like, that's okay. They won by 40 or whatever. Let's put that aside. That Oklahoma game, Oklahoma hadn't been playing very well during the stretch run of this season, but they played Gonzaga pretty tough. They hit some good shots. Like, they played well in that game, and Gonzaga just kind of little brothered them. Like, yeah, hit your threes, you know, make your shots, whatever. Like, this game is just, you're just not going to be in this game. Like, every time you hit a shot, we're going to have an answer. You know, the way they go to the Sweet 16, they play Creighton. They beat Creighton pretty good. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. Just like, yeah, okay, play your defense, hit your shots. You're just not going to be in this game. We have an answer for everything. USC was playing really well going into that regional final. Gonzaga beat them by 19. And then the UCLA thing, I still don't know. I'm like you. I don't know how to commodify what this UCLA team did. I don't know how to assess it. I probably need to go back and watch the games all over again and figure out how that happened. So I don't have an answer for that one. I don't want to, with this particular Gonzaga team, I just feel like they were really, really good and Baylor was better.
And Gonzaga is going to be good again next year. Like, this isn't, I feel completely different about this program than when kind of that period that you mentioned where we were all skeptical before they made that Final Four national championship appearance in 2017. I mean, I think most people were on the same page. There were different variations of it. There were some extremely hot takes that Gonzaga will never get here and there and whatever. But until that happened, I think a lot of us were like, yeah, this is cute. I mean, they, for lack of a better way of explaining it, they got a bunch of white guys that play good defense and they just don't have the athletes. That was generally the consensus of Gonzaga, but now they're getting the players that make them. I mean, Gonzaga's not supposed to get Jalen Suggs. Like, Drew Timmy was a fairly highly rated recruit. I think he was like top 50. So that's not completely surprising that they could beat out a Texas Tech or a TCU or whomever for Drew Timmy. But Jalen Suggs was the highest ranked recruit in program history. They're in the running and the favorite right now for Chet Holmgren, the number one overall recruit who's supposed to commit here in a few weeks. They have two other highly rated recruits coming in this year. Like, this is a different Gonzaga program. I released a bracketology, I think, on Sunday night super early, and I still put them as number one overall seed. After seeing what Baylor did and potentially what Baylor has coming back, I don't know if I need to switch that, but, I mean, then you're just splitting hairs. I couldn't care less who the number one overall seed is, but this is not the same Gonzaga program that it was even 3 or 4 years ago. Clearly, they have turned a corner. I think I wrote in that bracketology, it really feels like Mark Few is now just getting started with Gonzaga. Back 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, they were still kind of like this cute overachieving program, or we say, how are they getting these players to Spokane? The player development of him and Tommy Lloyd and that staff was really incredible, but now they're competing against these big-time programs for a Jalen Suggs, for a Chet Holmgren. I just don't have the long-term concern. Maybe this is a perfect segue into our disappointment index. For a lot of teams in this position, a lot of, like, Gonzaga is not a mid-major, so we're not even going to go there, but a lot of teams that maybe perception-wise overachieved to get to this point, like back when Butler lost to Duke, I think all of us were sitting there saying, when is Butler going to be in this position again? And it turns out they're in that exact position again, just didn't play well a year later. My point being is that with Gonzaga, I feel very confident that they're not going anywhere, and they could very well be back here with a team that is potentially just as good next year. That's why I want to have this disappointment conversation. And what I mean by disappointment is, after the tournament wraps and we've had time to just kind of come back to earth and give a full evaluation on this tournament, which teams are the most disappointed with what went down? And this conversation kind of reminds me of what we talked about last year after the canceled tournament, which we said, which teams lost the most with this cancellation? And the argument really came down to, is it Kansas, the clearly the best team in the country, a team that has underachieved and lost so many times to double-digit seeds in the last, what it would have been, 12 years since their last national championship last year? Or is it a team like Dayton, speaking of, who are they ever going to be in this position again? I mean, Dayton was truly one of the two or three best teams in the country last year. Are they ever going to be in this position again? I tried to make an argument for Kansas, but I think that you were right in saying Dayton lost a lot more, even like a San Diego State lost a lot more, because when are those teams truly going to have, they might be a two or three or four seed in the future, but when are they truly going to have a team that can compete for a national championship? So with this disappointment conversation, it's pretty simple. Like, which team is the most disappointing with what happened over the entire tournament? Is it somebody like Ohio State, who has the embarrassment factor, who has the factor of, God, Chris Holman's tournament record is not very good at Ohio State. Like, they haven't really truly competed for a national championship in quite a while now. Maybe 2012, if you want to say they had a chance. They probably didn't if they would have gotten past Kansas against Kentucky. They're talking about going all the way back to the Greg Oden year, which I think was 2006 or 2007. Is it a team like Ohio State? Is it a team like Texas? Is it a Purdue who had the embarrassment factor of this keeps happening? Or is it Gonzaga? Is it Gonzaga coming off of another national championship loss? And I am confident they'll be back here, but if you're Gonzaga, like, somebody I used to work with, Madison Hartman, tweeted this last night, where you essentially are saying, yeah, like, all these tournament wins are great, all these conference championships are great, but at this point, Gonzaga is chasing a national championship. Like, that is the expectation for Gonzaga now, and you have all these other things, so what do those things even matter if you don't have a national championship? I don't exactly know. I still think it's probably Gonzaga as the most disappointing team this year, or like they're feeling the most disappointment today than anybody else in college basketball. But I don't totally know how to, like, weigh this disappointment index. Where are you at with this?
Let me start at the top with Gonzaga. I don't think it's Gonzaga. And I've looked at this differently than a lot of people, I think, for a while. I have talked about this on the podcast before, but just to reiterate, like, only one team gets to win the championship. So if you're Gonzaga and you've now gone to two championship games within about a 5-year period, Yes, there is disappointment that you didn't seal the deal, but that's still a really good season. Like, you got to win 6 games to win a national championship in this tournament. They won 5. Like, that's pretty good. So I think, yes, it probably sucks today, but 20 years from now, you know, they're going to look back and think, that was a good season. Yes, I wish we had won one more game, but that was a good season. I gravitate more toward teams like Ohio State. Yes, Oral Roberts was... this is the only team I think I'm going to say this about in the field. I think Oral Roberts was maybe a little underseeded.
And yes.
Not just because they went to the Sweet 16. I said before the tournament started, so I feel very consistent here, that Oral Roberts was good. And they were a tough out. They were very good. They had to take them seriously. I said all that before the tournament started, so I feel very, you know, safe saying this.
How do you feel about Loyola, though?
Yeah. I think when you combine, like, man, I can't believe we had to play that team in the first round. Man, I can't believe we lost to a 15 seed. Man, we just went to overtime in the Big Ten championship game. And then we lose to a 15 seed. Like, I just think that juxtaposition is... that would bother me. That I would be really upset about those factors. I think Iowa is up there. I don't think they're number one in this conversation. But you've got to feel like you underachieved with Garza. You've got to feel like... and some of that is just like a program thing. It always feels like they underachieve in this tournament. But, you know... These last couple times especially, you got to feel like you got to at least get to the Sweet 16, you know? I think there are probably a couple teams in that Midwest region that looked at how things shook out and go, man, if only we had just played better with all the upsets that happened in that region. And I'm talking about, in case you didn't have the bracket memorized, Houston goes to the Final Four, never plays a single-digit seed in its entire region until it gets Baylor in the national semifinal. Like, there have got to be a couple teams in there that feel just disappointed. So I don't think it's Gonzaga. I think there are other options in other places that are more interesting to me. Maybe Texas.
See, I originally had Texas up to the top, but that game got rid of Shaka Smart and got you Chris Beard. That game could be one of the best things that's ever happened to Texas basketball. And I don't think that's an exaggeration.
It's definitely, I don't know what the opposite of a Pyrrhic victory would be, but it could end up being a valuable loss.
In the moment, yes, it sucked again because, like, this was, I don't want to suggest that Texas fans wanted them to lose,
right.
But.
Of course not. That's
I think that the consolation of that was, you knowing after that game, I thought there was no way Shaka was coming back. He was either going to leave, they were going to bite the bullet on the buyout, but that had to change. So I think if you're a Texas fan in that situation, you say, God, this is getting obnoxious. This sucks. I'm sick of being embarrassed nationally, but this is the change. I didn't think they had a prayer at Chris Beard. So maybe there are different levels of that. But anyway, going back, I don't really want to talk about Texas that much because who gives a shit? I think
your
is
official
kind of...
position on Texas sports. Who gives a shit?
I can't believe they got Chris Beard. I mean, I think that was one of two A-plus hires I've given so far this coaching carousel. That was just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I think this is a conversation like we always talk about when you're doing like a top 25 or you're ranking the top 40 teams in college basketball or college football, where you place them into pods. Yeah, there might be a number one or a number two team, but generally there are going to be pods of teams. It seems like the argument, I still think that there's a really strong argument for Gonzaga. When you think you have one of the best teams in college basketball history, you have the best team in program history. I, like you said, I'm not even sure that Baylor is a better team than Gonzaga today. You outlined it perfectly, so I'm not going to go back through that. It was just a really tough matchup for them. I still think there's a really strong argument for that, but it seems like it comes down to, is it Gonzaga or is it an Ohio State? Is it a Purdue? You didn't even mention a West Virginia. Is it an Iowa? So it seems like there are kind of different groupings of pods there where it's either the team that didn't win the national championship that should have, or is it a team that got embarrassed? Is it a team like Illinois? You've been irrelevant for so long and you've been waiting so long to get to this point, or maybe they're a little bit lower because you feel like you like what Brett Underwood is doing. You like the direction he's going. You feel like you're ahead of schedule. So maybe
that's how I feel. That's how I feel with Illinois. A little bit ahead of schedule. Think they're going in the right direction. Can I give you one that's way off the radar? Again, I'm not sure this is number one, but maybe sneaky belongs in the conversation. Eastern Washington played a great 30 minutes in their first round game. They're going to lose some of their best players and their coach left for Portland. But they almost had Kansas. They played a great first two-thirds of that game, three-quarters of that game, and then it just all fell apart in front of their eyes. All of it. The players, the coach, the game, it's all down the toilet.
Yeah, I don't see that at all. I see your point, but I don't see how they would be even close to the top.
Not at the top, but maybe in the conversation.
I'd honestly put someone like UNC Greensboro above them because you've had Wes Miller, whom a lot of people regard as like one of the top 25 or 30 best coaches in college basketball. You're going to lose him at some point. I didn't think that the jump to North Carolina was realistic, but insiders like Jeff Goodman seem to think it was, so I'll run with that over my opinion. But like, you've had Wes Miller building this program for a decade now. You're going to lose him at some point. You've been really good, like in the bubble of the SoCon for so long, but there's just nothing to show for it. I think you have a lot of teams like kind of in that mold, or like a Winthrop. You lose Pat Kelsey, you've been so good for a long time. Mark Prosser was kind of a weird hire. So you have a lot of teams like in that bubble.
Yeah.
You also have like...
Those are good picks.
I mean, like you talk about the Midwest region like with Rutgers. Rutgers outplayed Houston. Like they played a better game than Houston.
Should have been in the Sweet 16. Yeah.
Rutgers could have made the Final Four. Like they could have been that team because, I mean, talk about underseeded. Rutgers, I think they got the seed they deserve, but I don't believe that they, in terms of talent and potential, that they were a 10 seed. So maybe it's a team like that. Maybe it's a team like Wisconsin who, 6 years ago, they played better than Duke. Like they outplayed Duke for 37, 38 minutes, and they were on the verge of a national championship, and now you have to wonder, like, when is that ever going to happen? It's not going to happen under Greg Gard. I'm certain of that. That guy is not going to take them to a national championship. So, there are several. They might not even be. Rankings is probably the worst way to do this. There are maybe just different categories of pods.
I agree. It's like categories. It's the different styles of ingredients. You know what we need to do, you and me? We need to spin this podcast off. We need to pitch this to MGM. You, me, and Skip Bayless talking about teams that were incorrectly placed in the NCAA tournament, and it's called underseeded.
Do you want to wrap now, or do you want to finish the show?
Let's finish the show. How do you feel about Sardinia?
How long do you want to let this sit for?
I don't know what kind of
what
tanning.
Sport? I don't even know what sport you're going for here.
I don't know what kind of tanning you're getting in up there in Minnesota. I don't know if the weather's nice enough yet. You're doing a lot of shirtless stuff up there.
We had a nice weekend, though. I'm more of a cutoff tee guy than a shirtless guy, though.
Understood. We are going to Sardinia for a little tennis, of course. So this is... Virtually right now, conveniently, this is basically the start of clay season in the tennis season. You go from hard court to tennis to grass and then kind of back to hard court. So right now we're getting into clay. There is the Sardegna Open. Sardegna is basically Sardinia in Italian. I am looking at a couple players in this tournament. This is not a bigger tournament. This is an ATP 250 tournament, which means you're not going to see a lot of big names. It's more like tier two players. But I have done the legwork for you. A couple guys you want to look at in this particular draw. Lorenzo Musetti is a clay specialist. He's coming on pretty hot right now. There were just a couple of American tournaments in between now and the Australian Open back in February. Usually those are hard court tournaments. Musetti kind of viewed as a clay specialist, but he played well even on hard court. impressed some of his peers. Now we're coming back to Italy. Obviously, with a name like Lorenzo Musetti, you don't have to guess where he's from. He, I think, is going to do well in this tournament. He's not a seeded player, but he's actually the favorite right now to win everything, according to the odds. So I like him. I think there is a reason he's favored. He is very hot right now, and I like him to at least win a few games and get toward the end of this tournament draw. Another name to watch, Marco Cecchinato. Again, this is an Italian guy. He is a known clay guy. Not a guy you necessarily want to lay big money with outside of clay season, but when you get into this part of the year where you're playing, you know, in Roma and in these clay court bits, that's probably where you can feel comfortable betting on Cecchinato, and I like him to win a couple games as well. I think he's playing against a qualifier in the first round, so I don't know what the odds are going to be because they haven't said it yet, but I imagine he will be a comfortable favorite, and it might not be a bad idea to lay the money with him anyway because he is probably going to advance.
Where are we going now with betting? Like, where are your, like, what mode are you now in after crushing college basketball lines? Like, does it go exclusively to baseball, essentially, and then you mix in some of the clay? Or where is your mind going now? And we'll get to some NFL draft stuff here in a second. But where does your mind kind of set to for the next several weeks or several months?
I think before we get into that, just one really quick victory lap. You and I believe we're 18-6 on tournament picks.
Holy shit.
I mean, that is, like, hit that subscribe button, man. Like, we are killing it over here.
What did we lose on? We lost on Houston, Cleveland State. I lost on Bama against UCLA.
Yeah.
I think we hit every single over-under first half or game total.
That sounds right, yeah. And then I think
sure
there were a couple favorites, maybe like there in the middle. I don't have it all in front of me, but yeah, I mean, we really spun some picks.
West Virginia against Syracuse.
Yeah,
is one
yeah,
of
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
I think they were 2.5, maybe.
Yeah.
And they lost.
I don't remember that. I mean, I believe you if you say they did. I have no memory of that.
Where are we going betting, though?
Well,
where are you taking us now?
Yeah, you've got some options. Obviously, baseball. You got to be careful. You don't want to jump right into the deep end with baseball because you're basically going these first 3 weeks of the season off prior year's experience, right? How do you know who to bet in baseball? Well, you're probably betting pitchers, and you have to rely on the idea that pitchers are going to be somewhere in the ballpark of where they've been previously. So you want to be a little careful until you've got some data to work with this season because every season is just a little bit different. Pitchers have ebbs and flows throughout their career. Most people are not Clayton Kershaw. Most people are, you know, somebody that's not Clayton Kershaw. So I went to pull a name like a Cardinals B pitcher and just nobody was there in the brain. So be a little conservative. Maybe target some nice underdogs like what I did last week with the Orioles. Like, pick your spots like that, and you will probably end up in the black. Generally, with baseball, you want to bet underdogs. You don't want to lay a bunch with favorites because you do not have to miss on too many minus 250 Dodgers games to end up deep in the hole. So pick your spots. Be conservative, especially early on. Of course, we've got some NBA going on. The All-Star break is over. We are cruising toward the playoffs. So if you haven't been following the season, maybe take a couple days if you do want to get into a little bit of NBA action before the playoffs really get started in earnest. Take a couple days, read up on what teams have been good this year, what teams are good not just this year but right now. Look at the ATS records. One thing you might want to look at, for example, talking about local trends and not just season-long trends, but what's happening right now. One team that you might want to go against, Golden State. Golden State is in a real funk right now, and it's actually probably not even a funk. It's probably more of a, we have problems we're not going to be able to fix at this point. So they've lost 7 of their last 8 games, and some of them by big numbers. I think they lost to the Kings by like 40 at one point. Kings aren't even that good. They lost another game, I think, to Toronto by like 58. So, I mean, they've got problems. They've lost 7 of 8. They failed to cover 7 of 8. And anytime you're losing and failing to cover all the same games, that's usually a problem if you are a bettor. Like you might want to be careful with that, but they are a good team to target right now to go against. Utah, very good this year. Andrew Doughty, I know you are not locked into the NBA, but what team do you think has the best ATS record in the NBA this year?
Are you trying to trick me and it's not Utah?
It's not Utah. It is a team in the West. It is a team with a very good record.
Got to be the Denver Nuggets then, right?
It is not the Denver Nuggets.
God, really? Is it the Blazers?
It is not the Blazers.
How far are we going to go here? Is it the Suns?
It is the Suns, 32-17.
See, that's surprising because I feel like the Suns have gotten a lot of love. I mean, what do they start, like, you know, 500 in their first 10 or 12 games or something? I feel like Monty Williams is getting some decent Coach of the Year buzz. I don't think he's going to overtake Snyder or Thibodeau, but that surprises me because I feel like the public would kind of be all over the Suns. Or they're not. They're still skeptical of them as right. a real championship contender.
I think I'm a little skeptical too because, and maybe this is where I'm in sort of I'm separated from the public discourse and I'm in maybe a little bit of a pro bubble, but coming out of the bubble in Orlando last year where the NBA finished its season, Phoenix missed the playoffs, but they won like every game they played. Like they were crazy hot at the end of last year. And so they were kind of a trendy pick this year. Like I put a little money on their win total over. I think a lot of pros were targeting them as a futures option and a team that was going to be markedly better this year because they added Chris Paul and because of what they showed at the end of last season. So I would think that would trickle over into point spread expectations, but clearly it hasn't. And they have been very good this year. They're going to be in good position going into the playoffs. The problem with talking about it, you know, 49 games into the season is that a lot of that value is probably going away now because they are 15 games over 500 looking at the ATS stuff. You know, that they do have a good record. They are a known commodity now. So it's hard to jump on the bandwagon late and try to get the benefits of their point spread record when it's already been happening for 50 games. Nevertheless, it is a good team. I had some money on their money line actually the other day because I had them in a parlay to win a couple of games. NBA money line parlays, you got to be careful with betting favorites because outright upsets happen a lot. That's another sport where you can be very profitable just betting underdogs if you pick the right spots. Kind of a theme really in professional betting is bet dogs. So that's kind of where I'm at with the NBA. We're getting ready for that stretch run. Take a couple days, study up, look at where teams are right now and look at it in the context of who they've been all year. And then, of course, we mentioned we're getting ready for clay season. And there are certain names you just want to be aware of when you start to get into clay season, right? Hard court, there are certain players, if you're new to tennis betting or just watching tennis in general, there are certain players that are good at hard court. There are certain players that are good at clay. And then there are certain players that are kind of, you know, utilitarians. They're good everywhere. But you can make a lot of money, especially early on in a court season, by knowing who's been bad because they've been playing on hard court, but who is about to be really good. A lot of times, you're looking at Spanish players, you're looking at French players, you're looking at Italian players. Those guys, they grow up playing on clay in Western-ish Europe, so they, a lot of times, are the specialists. So when we get into Monte Carlo and we get into these pre-French Open tournaments that are going to happen over the next 7 weeks or so, there are certain names, Fabio Fognini, that's one. You want to target these clay guys. And maybe I could go into greater detail on Twitter or something about some names to know and who you want to go after. But in general, this next couple weeks, you can make a lot of money by going after guys who haven't been hot recently, but you know are going to get hot because now, the next couple of months, this is their time to shine on clay.
Is there a podcast devoted entirely to tennis betting? Serious question.
I'm sure there is somewhere. I don't know how much visibility it has.
So that's an opportunity in the market. I mean, when we're going from Jalen Suggs to Fabio Fanini in the same podcast, what other media segment, TV segment on the planet is going from Jalen Suggs to Fabio Fanini in 35 minutes?
Well, maybe we could pitch a third podcast. We can have this one. We can have Underseated with you, me, and Skip Bayless. And then we can have Clay Season that just rips through European tennis.
Going from Jalen Suggs to Fabio Fanini, closing real quick with a couple of minutes on some draft stuff, going to, I want to talk about Devontae Smith, and this is not going to be enough time to talk about the draft, talk about Devontae Smith, talk about these NFL draft specials on BetMGM.com. We'll get a lot more into draft stuff over the next few weeks. Like I said, we'll be back on Monday, and we'll get back to our, what's that, Monday the 12th, and we'll get back to our regular Monday-Thursday schedule. By that time, we'll only be, draft is 3 weeks from this Thursday, so by that time, we'll only be about two weeks out from the draft. So a lot coming. There are on BetMGM.com, if you click on the football link and then go to NFL draft specials on that left menu bar, there are something like 20 or 25 draft specials, anywhere from first overall pick. Trevor Lawrence has, you know, pretty high odds for that one, unless you're really feeling that Penei Sewell is going to be the number one overall pick. Anything from first overall pick, second overall pick, third overall pick, going down to really every position, first linebacker drafted, first safety drafted, total tight ends drafted in the first round, yada, yada, yada. The one that I want to mention before we close here, and again, we'll get into this more a little bit later on, is the first wide receiver drafted. Because Ja'Marr Chase, unsurprisingly, has the highest odds by far, minus 350. There is another player listed until Devontae Smith at plus 400, Jalen Waddle's at plus 600, and then it really falls off a cliff there. Rashad Bateman, 2,500, Rashad Bateman, 3,500, Tony, 5,000, and Marshall Moore. Amari Rodgers and Rondale Moore all the way down there. I can't help but wonder, and I haven't dug into this enough because I've been so much in March Madness mode, I'm still kind of getting into draft stuff right now, is Devontae Smith at 400. Just based on the last several drafts, I mean, even, I don't know if we'll go all the way back to like a Tavon Austin, I think that we can agree that Tavon Austin was maybe like the most talented skill player in that draft coming out of college football, but I'm not sure if he was the best pure receiver coming out of college football. And I think this year is very similar. I think Ja'Marr Chase is probably the best pure receiver, but is Devontae Smith the best skill player or like the most talented skill player in this draft? And because of that, and I know that the comparison isn't perfect here, but like last year when we had all those receivers, Judy, Lamb, and Henry Ruggs were all mentioned as who could go first. Most people seem to think if the Raiders passed on Ruggs, they were kind of the only team that if they went Ruggs, he would be the first wide receiver off the board, and I can't remember what number that was. But generally, most people agreed that Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb were the better receivers in that class. Just the team might be enticed, as the Rams were back, I mean, when was Austin? 2009?
2012.
Was it? Yeah. Was that late? When was Geno Smith? Was he 12 too?
Same year.
I don't know if there's any, and I have to dig into this again, but I don't know if there's any historical comparison here, but I wouldn't be that surprised if a team reached for the Heisman, and I'm not saying this because teams don't care about awards. Like, we've heard execs say this, we've heard former execs say this. They do not care if a guy wins Heisman. They do not care if a guy is all Big 12 Conference Player of the Year and All-American. They never, ever look at things like that. But if it only takes one team to see Devontae Smith as the most talented skill player in this draft to take him over a guy like Ja'Marr Chase, I think at plus 400, there's pretty decent value there. And we'll circle back to this in the next few weeks. I'm curious if that number moves kind of like it did last year as more and more conversation built up around Henry Ruggs and the Raiders potentially liking them. Obviously, we never know if it's a smokescreen or not. Turned out it wasn't last year. So we'll circle back to this, but that's one that I'm going to keep an eye on. How do you usually approach? I know you're not a big prop guy, but going into the draft this year, do you have anything that you're keeping an eye on, or do you have any approach that you're going to take to try to spot value at all? Have you done any work on this yet, or have you been in March Madness mode this entire time?
I've mostly been in March Madness mode, but I am going to try to bet the draft a little more this year. I'm really going to need to do my homework because it is something that I have less experience than some other sectors. But I had seen a little bit yesterday, and maybe not yesterday, but recently. This is really the only insight that I could probably give right now about Mac Jones and how his the line movement there on the prop of where he'll be drafted before or after, you know, 8.5 or whatever. I think it's moved up pretty significantly. I think I don't have it in front of me. I think I saw it moved up to 6.5.
Yeah, so, and for third overall pick, I think, which is the one that Mac Jones could get some play on here, third overall pick, it's Justin Fields at plus 120 and Mac Jones at plus 120. And after all these trades, like you said, and again, we'll get into this a lot more, but he's also one to keep an eye on because he feels like that niche quarterback where if one team doesn't take him at 3 or 4, then he could potentially drop down to 9 or 10. Kind of the same deal with Henry Ruggs, maybe Devontae Smith.
Yeah, and it's a case where if you've been following the reporting specifically around that third pick in the 49ers and Mac Jones, there are people that are very in the know, not just reporters, but people that have very specific relationships with Kyle Shanahan that are saying the 49ers like Mac Jones, they might want to go after Mac Jones. So, of course, this could all be a smokescreen. We all know what goes on around this time of year with the NFL draft and the misinformation. It just, how it was framed for me was when you look at the people who are reporting it, these are not necessarily people you, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you would leak bad information to. These are people you would run good information past. Hey, here's what I'm seeing. Is this what you see too? Because they have those sorts of relationships, Kyle Shanahan and these one or two reporters that have a history with football. They're not just like blooded reporters their whole life. They, you know, they have a history with the NFL, whether they're players or scouts or whatever, that have then pivoted in the media role. So that's what I've heard about Mac Jones and that position in the line movement. And certainly that's something we could probably look into a little bit more and follow up with at a later date.
Yeah. We'll probably do some more just general draft betting strategy and how it's completely different and how you're weighing so many more of the reports as opposed to the numbers, because very rarely does, I mean, even if we think that the 49ers like Mac Jones at 3, and that's a very, I don't know if it's a rare situation, I'm sure we can go back over draft history and find it out, but it seems very clear that when the Jaguars aren't going to take Mac Jones at 1, and the Jets aren't going to take Mac Jones at 2, I mean, barring some sort of shocking surprise, it's like, there's no reason, it's almost like when the Texans signed Mario Williams to the deal, I think it was in 2006, before the draft even happened. Like, there's no point in really having a smokescreen there because the Jaguars are taking Lawrence. They're not trading out. The Jets are most likely taking Zach Wilson. They're not trading out. Zach Wilson, the odds for the number 2 overall pick, I think, is minus 1,100. It drops all the way down to Fields at plus 1,100. So if you're the Niners, for all intents and purposes, you essentially have the number 1 pick in a draft that does not include Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. Like, you don't need to worry about really tipping your hand. You can take Mac Jones or Justin Fields or Trey Lance if you want and leak that information, because the Niners did not trade up to then trade back down. So, yeah, we'll get into more of those numbers, what history says, kind of some of the reports. You know, we haven't talked as much lately about public perception and how that plays into odds and your strategy, but I'm sure we'll talk more about that with the draft because it's just a completely different animal. We will be back on Monday, like I said, getting back to that regular Monday Thursday schedule going into the draft 3 weeks from, we're talking here on Tuesday morning, 3 weeks from Thursday, kicking off on April 29th through May 1st. We'll have a lot of draft stuff coming up. I also want to get back more into college football. We haven't talked college football in several weeks, so we'll start doing that. I'm not sure if that'll be on Monday or coming up. If you have any mailbag questions, shoot them to us at High Motor Pod. If you have any questions on the clay season in Sardinia with Fabio Fignetti? Fabio Fignetti, do I have
Fignini.
That right? Fignini.
Yeah.
Fignini.
It's F-O-G-N-I-N-I, I believe.
If you have any questions on Fabio Fignini for the clay season in Sardinia, shoot them to Chase at Chase A. Kitty. And again, those mailbag questions at High Motor Pod. on Twitter. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you for dropping by. Thank you for listening to the High Motor Podcast.
I saw a friend today. It had been a while. And we forgot each other's names. But it didn't matter, 'cause deep inside, the feeling still remained the same. We talked of knowing one before you've met, and how you feel more than you see, and other worlds that lie in spaces in between.